Hey, good morning. It's Patricia Murphy. It's Friday. This is Seattle Now. This week, Amazon employees walked off the job in protest of several company practices. Experts in the AI industry warned that things might be advancing a little too quickly, and we learn that none of us are very good spellers. We'll break it all down with KUOW's arts and culture reporter Mike Davis and Rachel Turlip, the senior social media manager for Washington's Department of Natural Resources. But first, let's get you caught up. The Supreme Court sided with a Washington concrete company in a big case over workers' rights. Union drivers at Glacier Northwest walked off the job, leaving concrete spinning in the company's trucks. Glacier wants to sue the Teamsters Union to regain the cost of the lost concrete, and the Supreme Court said they have the right. That means the process doesn't need oversight from the National Labor Relations Board, a break with tradition. Union advocates say the move hamstrings workers' protected right to strike. A King County manufacturing company is facing more than $2 million in fines for workplace safety violations. The State Department of Labor and Industry says it found 175 violations at three sites run by Young Corporation in Seattle and Woodinville. Among the most serious violations, workers were exposed to toxic chemicals, including when they were eating, and safety equipment was damaged and missing across the sites. The fine is one of the largest of its kind in state history. And say hello to Washington's newest amusement park. The Leavenworth Adventure Park opens this weekend. It's just outside the Bavarian-themed mountain town. Its main attraction is the Tumwater Twister, an alpine roller coaster that swoops over cliffs and down canyons, dropping more than 230 feet at one point. I won't be riding. The park says reservations are recommended and parking is free. It's Friday again. Hope your weekend starts soon. A federal judge is considering whether the Seattle Police Department should remain under his oversight. State Rep. Pramila Jayapal said no to the debt limit deal, but she said she knew it would pass without her vote. And the Seattle City Council rolled out a seven-year, $970 million housing levy for the fall ballot. KUOW arts and culture reporter Mike Davis is here. Really glad to have you, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. And Rachel Turlip is here. She's the senior social media manager for the Washington Department of Natural Resources. Rachel, really good to have you back.
I'm so glad to be back. The sun is out and it's hard not to be in a great mood.
Well, you two, in labor news this week, hundreds of Seattle-based Amazon corporate employees were hanging out at the Amazon Spheres, but this was no group lunch, you two. It was a walkout to protest the company's return to office mandate, multiple rounds of layoffs, and a lack of follow-through on climate promises. They were also joined by more than 1,000 other corporate employees in places across the world. This was a big display by Amazon workers. Mike, the move was flashy. Do you think they were taking a risk?
Yes. Anytime workers walk out, you're absolutely taking a risk. I'm hoping that this is the first of many risks. I'm all for labor. I think that no matter who we are and where we work, we're having a moment right now where people are stepping up against these large corporations. But if your question is this risky? Absolutely. Especially at Amazon. Yes.
I think that I've seen some people maybe poke fun at the idea that they walked out over lunchtime. I also think that if you're going to want to start a movement, you got to start somewhere. And we shouldn't belittle those small steps. I have to say, as a moment of levity, I know how hard it is to organize plans with even like six friends. So whenever you can get like 1,700 people on the same page at the same time, I want to talk to that organizer. I want to take some notes on how to do that.
It's really interesting you should say that, because this was no small feat, right? They started with a petition that said they wouldn't even do it unless they had a commitment of at least 1,000 workers. And, you know, some of the things they're talking about is the remote work situation, which actually started as a small Slack channel between a woman and a couple of her friends and then turned into some 30,000 member situation. So there's a will behind this organization, clearly, too. Another issue that they were protesting this week was the company's commitment to its climate pledge. Amazon makes a very big deal about that, but recently quietly ditched a commitment to shipment zero, which was a pledge the company made to make 50% of its deliveries net zero by 2030. Can you climate unpledge? You know?
It would change the arena name, that's for sure.
They put the name on the arena, Trish. Isn't that enough? I think the interesting thing with Amazon, first and foremost, you know, everybody liked to pile on Bezos when he was the man sitting in the seat. But one thing that kind of gets overlooked is that he had this idea where he wanted Amazon to be the best place on earth to work. Now, he never extended that to warehouse workers, but as long as you were corporate and worked in the office, that was his vision. Now that he's gone, it's like, you mentioned one program that got cut, but there was actually quite a few programs that got cut. The Amazon healthcare got cut. The idea to have the truck that would have discount products got cut. There was a couple of other things that were like, you know, helpful. Their philanthropy wing, Amazon Cares, that also got cut. So all of these good things that Amazon was trying to do, these are all of the things that got cut once Bezos took a step back. I think that those employees walking out in this climate does make a statement. I mean, cost of living is through the roof. Anytime anybody does anything that puts their job at risk, it is a really big statement. So for all of us who have jobs, Amazon workers, keep it going.
And there's a lot to be said about how the labor movement is shifting the conversation right now. But who holds the power is still very unclear, right? We'll see how that plays out. From one big tech topic to another, industry leaders in artificial intelligence, including Microsoft-backed OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, are warning of the dangers of AI, including human extinction. That'll catch a headline. Altman and other leaders, including the so-called godfather of AI, Geoffrey Hinton, signed a statement saying that mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority, alongside things like nuclear war and pandemics. I am not going to lie. That news kind of shook me a little bit. When the creator of a product warns it could become too powerful, it makes me wonder if it already has.
I'm not a doom and gloom person, but when I look at the plot of Terminator, and you can laugh that off all you want to, but then when you realize that it was supposed to be set in 2029, it becomes a little scarier in terms of, and I'm kind of poking fun at this now, but yeah, I think that it's incredibly human for us to make something before we fully understand it, right? We invented the car and then we invented seatbelts. We've been playing catch up for the things that we invent and let get out of hand for our entire existence. So I think that we're always going to be in some ways playing catch up to rein in the messes that we make as a human race.
This one, though, sounds like it could become catastrophic at some point. Hinton, the godfather, told NPR last week he used to think it would take 30 to 50 years for AI programs to outpace their creators. Now he thinks it's like 5 years. 5 years. Mike, that scares me.
It scares me a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I feel like I've gone both ways on this whole AI thing as this journey has continued. I think it's complicated. Will it wipe us out? Maybe, but there's a lot of things that can wipe us out. Like technically we were always one push of a nuclear launch code away from all of this being over anyway. Like life is fickle. AI, it's just, it's not there yet. It's not in a place right now that would scare me. I think that the things that worry me the most, honestly, are the deep fakes and how we can be manipulated. I feel like we're in a point right now where what is the truth? I think this next presidential election, that's going to be at the forefront. That piece scares me, but the idea that it's going to come for us and take all of our job, I don't know, Trish. I'm waiting. I'm waiting on the computer that can be Mike Davis. I haven't seen it yet. I think at some point capitalism is going to have to come in and do something about that, because the idea that AI can steal our jobs, yeah, it sounds good when the corporations are using AI to replace us all. But if nobody can make money to actually spend, then this whole thing is going to crumble anyway. They need us. They need labor. And labor is having a moment right now. So we'll see where all this goes.
I'm kind of like Mike. I think to me, the biggest impact AI has on my life is so far is seeing just how prevalent it's become in terms of the average person's use. It's not something that the tippity top Fortune 500 companies are using, you know, behind the scenes. It's something that we see every single day on social media. How many of us were fooled by the AI image of the Pope in the puffy jacket, right? Like that was that's kind of a litmus test for how well can you determine if an image is authentic or not. And so, Mike, I think you're dead on. I think that's going to be, to me, my number one concern moving forward is just how prevalent AI is and how easily it can fool us right now with the lack of education that we have as a society.
And you know, looking at it from the arts perspective, like the technology that people have been creating so far to spot the AI, it's behind the actual AI. So it hasn't even really caught up to detect it yet. But I think that while that is a problem and while that might be able to be used to swing elections or you know, sway public opinion, and those are really big, important things. I mean, just the idea of AI taking over, it's hard for me to really go there because I feel like there's so many components of AI that are already in our lives that we've trained ourselves to ignore. Like there's AI technology that's replicating our voices. If you're afraid of AI, but you use talk to text, congratulations, you helped train that. If you use your iPhone scanner to unlock your phone, congratulations, you're helping with facial recognition software. If you use autocorrect when you text, congratulations. That's where these chatbots, that technology, that's how they guess how we talk. Because our cell phones. So all of this information that people are so afraid of, this is the stuff that we have just been giving up for free anyway, and then incorporating into our life. And now it's normal. So part of me feels like what AI is going to be is a tool that we use. We'll figure out how to make our lives easier. There's not going to be a computer that's going to host Seattle Now better than Trish, but there may be AI technology that can help you put your notes together faster.
Those are ethical questions I think we would have to suss out, right? Because journalism, you got to suffer for the journalism, Mike.
Yes, and that's the reason why this Writers Guild strike, I've been watching it so closely, because that's something that they've been talking about. They do not want AI to be able to be used to write scripts. I agree with that. Hopefully they get that win. And I think that journalists should be next. AI should not be used to write articles, right? Like there's certain things that we should decide as humans that we will not use AI for. And hopefully our unions can band together and make this push, because we can't trust these corner cutting corporations to do it for us.
I think to Mike's point too, there's always going to be elements of our experience that are uniquely human that I don't think AI can replicate. And that's a certain level of authenticity or emotions or moments that I can't envision will ever successfully be recreated with AI. And I fully expect maybe come 2060, I'll be the, you know, old crotchety millennial being like, AI, back in my day, humans had, you know, real authentic emotions. And I understand that maybe I can't see the full scope of it, but I do think that there are some elements of our experience, of our existence, that are just uniquely human that cannot be replicated.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point, Rachel. We'll find out if we're frogs in a boiling pot or not.
2029, it's coming. We'll see. Arnold Schwarzenegger pops up, half machine.
Great. Oh my gosh. All right, a lot of tech talk. One last thing before we go. Seattle's got one of the best spellers in the nation. 14-year-old Lakeside School student Sancheli Bohacek headed to the Scripps National Spelling Bee this week. One of the words that got her there is a Seattle staple. She correctly spelled banh mi in the first round of the preliminaries. I feel like you got to know how to spell that if you live here. That word was a gift. Either of you two have spelling bee memories? Any trauma surrounding a word that knocked you out of a spelling bee?
I will say, first of all, congratulations to Sancheli. That's incredible. I've never been a very strong speller. The one year I was involved in the spelling bee was fifth grade. And I tend to misspell words like embarrassed or bureaucracy, which are two things I probably shouldn't know how to spell in my job, but especially bureaucracy. But I was so committed one year. I wanted to be a strong speller. I never had been. I was committed to memorizing how to spell Nebuchadnezzar and anti-disestablishmentarianism, because I was so convinced I was going to get those words in competition. And I remember sitting there like memorizing Neb, you, Chad, Nezer. Like I thought that was breaking it up, and I was so convinced I was going to like save the day. And no, those words never came up. I probably ended up misspelling something like embarrassment or bureaucracy. But that was my very fleeting spelling bee moment. I went back to basketball after that.
That's impressive. That is impressive. I've never been in a spelling bee. I competed in a ton of sports. I never competed in words. I compete in words now. But the funny thing too, though, is, I mean, I didn't even know we were still doing spelling bees, Trish. Like, talk about AI. Didn't AI wipe out the need for us to even learn how to spell? I feel like I got a 10-year-old, they're teaching her to type. I don't even know that they're doing a bunch of handwriting. They don't even tease it. So I don't know. I can't spell. There's so many words. I think tomorrow is at the top of my list of words that I never get right. Sometimes I spell it so wrong that my iPhone can't even help.
Even recognize it.
I get frustrated. But no. I grew up with computers and autocorrect and assistance with spelling. So that's never been something I needed to be good at, even as a journalist.
The lost art of spelling. You know, Mike, it's funny. I grew up and came up through school before spell check. So as a horrible speller, this was a very rough ride for me. And I'm still plagued by words. I still have a really hard time spelling beautiful. Decision is always a bad one for me. Yeah. Oh, God, I could go on. Just ask my editor. I'm a terrible speller. And our local gal didn't make it all the way, but she tied for 23rd, which is really incredibly impressive.
That's amazing.
I definitely would not have made it that far. All right. Before we head out today, I think we should just play a quick round of Are You Smarter Than an Eighth Grader?
Oh, God.
Oh, man. I'm going to give you each a word that's Angeli spelled correctly, and we'll see who's got spelling chops. No cheating, no Googling.
Can't cheat.
And I'll have the standard definition language of origin. I've got the setup. You ready, Mike?
First, put me on the spot. Okay, let's go.
Mike, your word is omoplate. Omoplate. The definition is, that's your shoulder blade.
Can you use it in a sentence? I am stalling, Trish. I am clearly stalling. Why are you going to put me on the spot like this? I've never heard that word before. I'm going to go out on a limb here. It starts with an O.
Mm-hmm.
O-M.
Mm-hmm.
A?
Omoplate.
O-M-O-P-L-A-T-E.
Huzzah!
Hey, congratulations.
All right, Rachel, here's your word.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Your word is Nevo. That is a level or plateau, especially in a progression. And I asked ChatGPT to write me a sentence.
Can you say that again?
Yeah. The word is Nevo.
Yeah.
It's a Nevo. French word. Nevo. French origin.
Oh, God. Okay.
Here's a sentence. The Nevo of their performance was exceptional, earning them a standing ovation.
Okay. I know I'm going to get this wrong. So, Mike, I'm so glad you went first, because maybe people will be so impressed by your brilliance that they will forgive me for me getting this wrong. I'm going to go with N.
Correct.
E. Darn it. See, that's as far as I got one letter.
I think this was an especially difficult one.
It was French.
You're so kind.
is it N-E-U?
Nope.
N-O-U.
Nope.
Wow.
N-I.
Oh my goodness. We were going to get it eventually. We're going to go down the
valley. Yes, we're getting there.
Finally.
Take the village to spell a word.
AI can't replicate this.
Right, exactly. AI can come up with the sentence, but they can't replicate this brilliance. Nevo, N-I-V-E-A-U. Thanks so much to both of you for playing along to that, because, you know, I'm going to say Mike is the winner, but I'm not sure any of us would find our way out of a spelling bee at this point.
Oh, no. And these were eighth grade words, you said?
Yeah.
Shout out to you. I'm impressed.
That's right. I am impressed. And we are going to leave it there, you two. Mike Davis reports on arts and culture here at KUOW. And Rachel Turlap is the senior social media manager at the state's Department of Natural Resources. Thanks again, you two.
Of course. I do arts and culture, not spelling, for the record.
And I use spell check before those tweets go out.
Thank you for listening to Seattle Now. Today's show was produced by Vaughn Jones, who welcomes our new computer overlords. Our show's fantastic production team also includes Caroline Chamberlain Gomez, Claire McGrain, Brooklyn Jamerson Flowers, Jenny Cecil Moore, and Brandy Fullwood. Matt Jorgensen does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Patricia Murphy. See you Monday.